New parents know one of their most important jobs is to make sure their babies get enough to eat. A growing body of research finds early eating and feeding practices can mean the difference between a healthy infant and one who struggles with obesity. Now the University of Cincinnati has a federal grant to test a community-based intervention for children from birth through 12 months. The project is in collaboration with Cincinnati Children's Hospital and the nonprofit Every Child Succeeds. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the risk factors for infant obesity and the prevention strategies to be studied are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Psychology and Director of the Healthy Bearcats Families Lab, Kathy Stow, and Scientific Director for Every Child Succeeds, Robert Ammerman. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So Dr. Stow, can you start out by defining infant obesity for us?
Yes. What we're really concerned about here is both, you know, children's weight and their growth trajectories, but also what kids are eating. So we're thinking about how to keep kids off of these very accelerated growth trajectories where they're growing, you know, at a level rate in comparison to their peers. And one of the ways that we really want to promote that is through a healthy diet. And one of the things that people often are surprised to hear about, I think, is that that means diet diversity and introducing kids to a variety of different foods and on a healthy timeline.
What are some of the major risk factors for infant obesity, Dr. Stow?
Yeah, there's a number of different factors, right? And some of those are, you know, genetic and individual level. There's also a lot of societal and systemic influences that influence obesity risk. We do see a lot of disparities in the prevalence of obesity. And this relates to things like food insecurity, access to foods. There's also risk factors at the individual child level. So kids, you know, preferences for certain foods. We see things even like kids have preferences for certain textures or certain types. And sometimes those aren't the healthiest foods, right? And those are the ones that can be high in calories or put kids at risk. We also know families are juggling a lot of things and they have a lot of things going on. And, you know, families' ability to focus on healthy eating, prevent obesity is often, you know, at odds with a lot of the other things that families are managing and dealing with.
Yeah. Dr. Ammerman, with infant obesity, I guess I wonder, you know, a lot of us think of obesity and we think of a BMI for adults or something. Is it similar for infants? What are you really looking at to help determine if an infant is obese?
Well, I think, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think one of the things is we do calculate weight for length, and we do look at that in comparison as a percentage to other children at that age. We really, when we work with families, though, we really try to not focus on, you know, the percentile or focus on the term obesity. That's often not a way to meet families, you know, really where they're at and they're thinking about things. So we do measure weight and we do measure length and calculate those percentiles. And, you know, there is a percentile if you're over a certain percentile level that's considered, you know, obesity or at risk for obesity. But we really want to encourage families to think, you know, over the long haul of how their child is growing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Dr. Ammerman, does infant obesity always result in childhood obesity? What kind of health challenges does it present if an infant continues to be obese into their childhood?
I think that's probably a better question for Dr. Stow.
Okay, sorry about that, Dr. Stow.
That's all right.
There's a number of, you know, different factors that influence those trajectories. And we do see, unfortunately, that a lot of the kids do stay on that trajectory. I think a lot of people have this perception that children will outgrow their weight, that they'll lean out as they, you know, begin to like walk or be more active. And unfortunately, that sometimes carries the idea that we don't have to pay attention to children's weight or we don't have to think about that. And for some kids, you know, that does happen. But for a lot of kids, we see that they don't outgrow it, their, you know, weight. And so ways we can do that is really this early, an intervention. And really our program tries to focus on prevention. So how do we get there from the very beginning experiences that kids are having with foods to set them off, you know, on the right path? It's really exciting being a psychologist that works with young kids because, you know, adult habits are really hard to change. Later childhood habits are really hard to change. Early childhood habits, I think, are one of the spots that we have the most opportunity to just set things right from the very beginning with what kids are experiencing and what they're doing. So our program that we provide starts working with kids when they're 3 months old. So we're helping give parents information about how they're going to start introducing complementary foods to their kids. How are they going to get that diet variety for their kids from the very beginning? And that really can prevent some of the challenges that we know are harder to correct than they are to prevent from the beginning. Mm.
We're talking about risk factors for infant obesity and a local effort to prevent it. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Ammerman, I know Dr. Stout just mentioned starting at 3 months old. That sounds like a lot like what Every Child Succeeds does. Can you talk about the program that Every Child Succeeds operates, the kind of the science behind that, and how this new effort will affect that programming?
Absolutely. So Every Child Succeeds is a home visiting program based at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. But the services are provided by a number of agencies in southwestern Ohio and northern Kentucky. And our home visiting program involves enrolling mothers during pregnancy or shortly after the child's birth and providing them with a home visitor who goes to the home and supports moms as well as other family members in providing the child with the best possible start in life. And they do that through education and linking families to other kinds of services and just preparing the child so that they're on track developmentally, so that they are healthy physically and mentally, and also so that they're ready for school. Dr. Stowe's program, we were very excited to work with her on bringing this into Every Child Succeeds and testing it, because we've always been an organization focused on learning and improving the service through research and testing. But her program very much aligns with making sure that the child has the healthiest environment for their development. And obesity prevention is one of a number of things that we focus on. And it's just a very nice addition. And the combination both of Dr. Stowe's program and the ongoing home visiting services provided by Every Child Succeeds is a very powerful combination that we think will really benefit families and children.
So, Dr. Ammerman, have conversations about nutrition and feeding and those sorts of things, have those traditionally been part of the Every Child Succeeds program? Does this new effort that Dr. Stowe is bringing into the mix, does that kind of amp those up, or is it a new addition to what the program's been doing all along?
Yes. Well, the home visitors talk about a lot of different things and provide information and support about a lot of different things, including nutrition and including feeding. But Dr. Stowe's program, and she can elaborate on this more, provides more sort of structure, additional information, direct support, longer-term support. So it really enhances this part of the program and increases the likelihood that it will really have a big impact.
I want to talk more about that, Dr. Stowe. You mentioned that the work that you're doing starts at kind of 3 months. You and I exchanged a little bit of back and forth about some of this earlier today. And I wanted to raise the point of breastfeeding, because I was trying to do lots of homework for this conversation. I saw research pointing to the lack of breastfeeding as a factor for infant obesity. I know that lactation is not your specialty in terms of your work and your the work that you're doing with this program, but is that a factor that can lead to infant obesity? What role does that play in potential conversations with parents early on?
Yeah, that's a great factor to consider. The research does support an association between breastfeeding duration and specifically looking at a period of exclusive breastfeeding. So there's a combination of different things here, which is potential benefits of the breast milk itself, also benefits of the opportunity, the nursing at the breast, and some of the different mechanisms and how kids are able to get the milk versus from a bottle. And then also related to exclusive breastfeeding, a key piece of that is delaying introduction of complementary foods. So delaying introduction of foods besides formula or breast milk. And so organizations such as the American Academy of Pediatrics recommend exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months. And so that means, you know, promoting that breastfeeding and then also holding off on introducing other foods. You know,
and you said that was for the first 6 months.
For the first 6 months, mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's a lot of challenges that come with breastfeeding, a lot of barriers to breastfeeding oftentimes. There's a lot of individual level factors and also systemic factors that make it hard and challenging for moms to often breastfeed for that long of a duration.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And so I think what you had mentioned to me earlier is when your program's starting at 3 months, even that early, you come across a lot of families who have already stopped breastfeeding, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Is that because of those challenges they're facing?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of those challenges and, you know, especially things, you know, as we see, you know, around 4 weeks is often a time where people will start to fall off. And so, yeah, a very small percentage of the families that we've worked with in the past at that 3 month time point have still been breastfeeding.
Yeah. And if I'm remembering correctly, your research is focused on a lot of lower income families. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that a lot of those moms maybe don't have paid maternity leave, or maybe they're working several jobs and continuing to breastfeed or pumping it. I mean, it sounds like it can be almost impossible.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things that are stacked up against families and against moms in particular around breastfeeding. And I think there's a lot of things that could be done to make this easier for families. And, you know, it's down to all those barriers. And then also good role models and examples within communities that can help families to see how this can be obtainable and be possible. A number of the moms that we work with, you know, they don't have a mother who breastfed or a friend that's breastfed. And so that, you know, it makes it a little more intimidating. You don't have someone to go to, you know, answer those questions. One of the things we're doing in our program is families are meeting with us as health behavior coaches, who are people who have expertise in health behaviors, behavior management, nutrition, but they're also meeting with peer counselors. And so that's a mom who has similar lived experience to the moms that are in Every Child Succeeds, who meets with the mom once a month and can share their advice in a, you know, a unique perspective of somebody who's had similar lived experiences, who also is a mom, who can share some of those, you know, tips and tricks or the things that they did that worked well for them. And just validate and understand families from a unique perspective.
Sure, and offer some of that support that the mm-hmm. moms might not necessarily be getting from other mm-hmm. sources.
Yeah.
Dr. Ammerman, for the work that Every Child Succeeds does, what role does maternal mental health play in all of this, that the physical health of the baby?
That's a great question. I do want to say just a real quick follow-up and to note that the home visitors in Every Child Succeeds do support the mothers and in breastfeeding and you know, try to help them. However, as noted, there are barriers and issues that make that difficult for a number of the moms, and this program that Dr. Stowe has developed in particular really helps. Mental health is really important. We actually, in Every Child Succeeds, have a program called Moving Beyond Depression, which is designed to support mothers who are suffering from depression, which is something that can affect up to 40% of the mothers in our program at some point. And that involves providing a mental health clinician to help the moms recover, because their ability to be, you know, the best parents that they can be. It's difficult when you're suffering from depression, and by helping them, we can really make a difference. And it also has implications for feeding, and certainly for breastfeeding in particular, but also dealing with issues around nutrition and sort of a structured, focused feeding program for your child.
Yeah. Dr. Stout, we were talking earlier about when to introduce solid foods that the leading experts say not before 6 months. It seems like there are some people who get this advice like, oh, if you want your baby to, you know, your baby isn't growing fast enough, introduce them earlier. Is that kind of pressure common among the people that you're talking to?
Yeah, that's very common. I think the worry about if your baby is getting enough, right? And I think that's so tied to, you know, the sense of identity as a mom and being a good mom and giving your kid what they need. Making sure that your child has enough nutrition is just such a basic need. And so I think that's really on people's minds. And so they're wanting to make sure that they are giving enough. And sometimes that, you know, can mean this nervousness that something needs provided besides formula or breast milk. The other common thing where sometimes we hear that people are rushing is because people hear that if they introduce solid foods, their baby will sleep better through the night. And what mom doesn't want her baby to sleep better through the night?
Amen.
Sleep is a really challenge.
Yep.
So there's misconceptions out there that if you introduce solid foods earlier or if you do things like put infant cereal within bottles that will help babies to sleep better through the night, there's no empirical evidence that supports that at all. And so we really recommend that families don't do those things. There's also a number of things to think about. Obesity prevention, with delaying introduction of solid foods, but also things like choking risk, making sure that your baby has the motor skills to sit up straight, to be able to eat, and all of those safety factors too.
Yeah. Are there other milestones parents should be watching for, Dr. Stout, to make sure their babies are healthy? We've talked about waiting to introduce solid foods. Does that apply even to fruit juices? Some people, I think, are even putting sodas in bottles for little bitty kids.
Yeah.
What are those milestones we should be looking for?
Yeah, I think the really good news for, families is in those first months, you can trust that your child's formula or breast milk is giving your child the nutrition that they need. Even when we start talking about introducing solid foods, it's really for gaining that experience of learning how to eat, learning familiarity with the flavors. Your child is still getting the nutrition they need from the formula and the breast milk. So families will sometimes worry, when I give my kids new foods, they don't eat enough of it or they play with it more than they consume it. And that's okay. They're getting what they need from their breast milk and from their formula. They don't need, before that 6 months, anything else. If you think about how small a baby's tummy is, even things like water can fill up that space in their stomach that's really needed for the more nutrient-dense formula in breast milk.
Mm. Wow. So not even water before 6 months. Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Ammerman, we've talked a little bit about this, but can you talk more about the social supports that programs like Every Child Succeeds provides, that this program, Healthy Eating for My Infant, that Dr. Stout has developed? How important are those? What kind of social supports do they provide for parents?
Well, certainly a lot of the mothers that we work with have smaller social networks. They don't necessarily have lots of people that they can turn to, and the home visitor in part addresses that by being somebody who visits them on a regular basis, provides them with useful information and support and help. And one of the things that the home visitors work on with moms are growing those social networks and creating new social connections, building on social connections that might have been lost. We know that social support is really important to mental and physical health. And by doing that, we're kind of setting the stage to really take advantage of programs like Dr. Stowe's, which include the peer counselor she mentioned, which is another source of support, and the interventionist. So building these professional supports while also building personal and family supports really sets the stage for the child to thrive.
Dr. Stout, we've been talking so much about feeding and eating. What about physical activity? And I'm not talking about baby push-ups or chin-ups or something, but just giving infants the space to crawl and move and roll around. Is that kind of part of the equation here?
That's also a really important part of that health behavior, including tummy time, right? Just giving kids the opportunity for tummy time. In our program, we focus most on healthy eating because the research supports that while, you know, those other things like tummy time, physical activity are really important too, the healthy eating is the factor that is most strongly associated in this very early age group with obesity risk and with growth trajectories.
Mm-hmm. Do food deserts play a role in this problem too?
You know, you are spot on with that. That's a bit. Food access is a huge part of this, and not just access to food in general, but access to high quality, you know, foods, nutritious foods, fresh foods, and that can be a really barrier, a big barrier for families, and also the cost of foods. We, you know, all know that to eat healthy is very expensive, and one of the things we try to do in our program is be realistic and supportive of families around what are, you know, realistic expectations. So is it really realistic that, you know, families to eat, you know, all fresh, like, produce that, you know, they purchase every day? Of course not, right? And in families sometimes feel challenged when they get those kinds of recommendations, right, that don't feel realistic. And so we try to meet families where they're at with realistic recommendations. We also, as part of our program, are providing grocery delivery to try to address that aspect of food access. And we're also providing additional funds for families to use to purchase foods because we also know the cost is a large barrier to healthy eating.
Sure. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about maternal health and behavior. We don't have much time left, but in 20 or 30 seconds, how about dads? Are they important in all this too?
Oh, of course, right? And in any adult that's in that home is important. We see all kinds of family makeups, right? Moms, dads, grandparents, aunts, uncles, all the adults that are involved in that child's care play a really pivotal and important role.
Well, I have been talking with University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Psychology and Director of the Healthy Bearcats Families Lab, Kathy Stow, and Scientific Director for Every Child Succeeds, Robert Ammerman. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this important conversation.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Her son Dorian is her helper today. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.